doors open for me because I just kept showing up. I was like, I'm going to keep showing up and keep trying. But there was no plan. It was not to get out of the military, be a fitness trainer. It was get out of the military. All right, don't go broke and just keep trying to be successful.
What's up, Stokecast fam? Jonathan Ronzio here. You are about to tune into a conversation I had with Tempo trainer Clarence Hairston, AKA Lil Busy. Tempo is an AI-powered home gym, helps you hone your form and fitness from right in your living room. Clarence was one of the first trainers to get on board before this tech company took off. And in this episode, we go deeper than just what Busy is bringing to the fitness table. We connected just a few days before New Year's, and we dug into how to set goals in so many different areas of your life, how to stay motivated when those goals might go out the window, plus how to make positivity a switch that you can flip on demand. And outside of his POV on training, Clarence shares his candid story of how his personal and professional life unfolded and developed after coming out of the Air Force and coming out. This dude is truly a bundle of energy and joy and was an absolute pleasure to have on the show. So here we go. Enjoy. Clarence Hairston, everybody.
I got into fitness by accident. It was something that I just started doing when I was in the military, and I realized, oh man, I feel really good doing this. How can I make other people feel this good? Because I have a lot of people around me that are not feeling good. And that thought sparked into this whole process of let's work out and make other people work out. I've worked for a lot of companies. I've always told people I've just found myself to be in the right spot at the right time to get opportunities. And I'm a big fan of Kobe Bryant. Rest in peace. He's like my idol. And one thing I learned from Kobe was if you get a chance, seize it, take it. Like, don't waste it. Don't squander it. And so every time I've got an opportunity, all I've decided to do is just give it my all. And it's turned into a really great, successful, and just amazing career that I feel like I'm just touching the surface and is going to take off even more. But yeah, it's what I do. I like to help people out through fitness, but more so just kind of like allow people to just be, because that's what fitness did for me, is it taught me to just be myself. And in being myself, I was able to find people who liked me for me and not put on this mask or this character every day. And so I just want to help other people be themselves and be their best.
I love that. And you've got a little tie to Kobe as well, right?
Yes, I do. I have a puppy that we got. He's a quarantine puppy, like a lot of people got puppies. And we were going to name him something completely different. We were like thinking of names, and then we were eating with a friend, and he was like, you should name him Kobe. And like when he said that, my boyfriend and I were just like, oh my God, how did we never think of this? Like, this is just a no-brainer. And weirdly enough, like it fits. Like everyone that's like, sees me like, yeah, he is a Kobe. And so, yeah, he's my little Kobe. And he just reminds me every day, hey, be great, Dad. Be great for me, because I was great for you.
All right. Obviously this year, a lot of goals for a lot of people went out the window. So I'm curious your take on how you stay motivated to continue training when you don't necessarily know what you're training for, when there's not a benchmark at the end that you have to get to. How do you stay focused on training without a training goal?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's definitely relative to this year, and even for some people, probably just relative to life. You know, I'm young, I'm learning, I'm 32, so I'm not, you know, I'm wise enough, but not too wise. But I've learned that you've got to just take each day at a time. I paid a lady a lot of money over the last 2 years to kind of help me to move past this whole idea of, I've got these deadlines that I've got to hit, and this is what's got to happen for me. And I was stuck in that. And I feel like for a lot of us, especially people my age and older, that's the world we grew up in. You know, by this age, you have to have kids. By this age, you have to do these things. And we set these timelines for ourselves at these really young and just kind of like non-experienced ages that when we get to those ages, we're like, oh man, maybe I shouldn't have done that because now I feel this pressure. And I feel like with this year, you know, it was so early when this pandemic happened. It was March, but it was barely 3 months into the year. And so people had all these New Year's resolutions that they still were like, I can go for this, right? They were starting these programs. And then for everything to just be shut down, it kind of shook everyone, and myself included. I'll be honest with you, like, I'm someone who works in the fitness industry or someone who's just really active. So I work 6 days a week. And before that, I was in the military. Before that, I did music. So for you to tell me, hey, sit down, you can't do anything, that was like a shock to my system. And for a few days, I just sat and I thought, I was like, cool, this will be cool. I can enjoy it. But then I realized I was not happy because my routine was achieving my goals, was doing the things that made me happy. And I no longer could do that. So I had to find a different motivation, a different way to get myself to where I wanted to be. And the way that I did it was just to pivot. Whenever I got in these dark spaces or I just felt like I was unsure, because in March, a lot of us were unsure. We didn't know anything. You mean you looked at the news hour by hour, it was like something different. Wear a mask, don't wear a mask. This is shut down. We're gonna be back in 2 weeks. It's gonna be a month. It might be till summer. You didn't know anything. And so I just shut that off and I was just like, okay, I'm gonna set this goal for myself today. And it started like, simply was like, okay, when I wake up in the morning, just do like 10 minutes of yoga, 10 minutes of stretching. If I just do like a little core workout, just do something to get my endorphins going. And then throughout the week, I just set these small little goals for myself, because none of us knew the outcome. We didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, we're in December. And if you really take a step back and look at that, I don't know how much further we've come from March and December. So I was like, I can't worry about these long-term goals. I've just got to figure out, what am I going to do on Monday? What's my Monday goal? Focus on Monday. What am I going to do on Tuesday? Focus on Tuesday. That's what I'm going to do on Tuesday. And in keeping that mindset, I was able to stick with like a fitness routine, and fitness became like therapy for me. It was like, you know, I know on Tuesdays and Thursdays, I go for my long run. I know on Wednesdays, I try to do like an online class to support one of my trainer friends. But those became the milestones that I looked forward to completing. Instead of trying to be like, well, I had this cool trip where I was going to go somewhere in May, or I was going to do the Spartan race in June, focusing on what was happening in that moment kept me going to the next moment.
Such good tips there. I have been somebody who operated in that same way, who had the Spartan race or who had the mountain or the trip. Whatever. For me, it was like every 90 days, there was a big objective that I was training for and something that I needed to do. And it was the hardest thing in the world to take a step back from that. And to try to focus on like, what are these little mini goals? I don't like mini goals. They don't motivate me as much. And you had to like reframe habit building versus long-term accomplishments, right?
Yeah, because I think that's just the way that our society works these days. I mean, like take social media for an example. Everyone's like, oh, I was silently working on this for the last month. Here it is. And you don't see a lot of today. I found this recipe and I've been wanting to make this banana bread forever. And I finally did it first time. Like those traditionally aren't things that I think we internalize that you wouldn't celebrate. And so for me, it was like flipping the switch on that and being like, no, celebrate not sitting on the couch all day and watching all six episodes of Tiger King. Like celebrate that, that you got off the couch and did something, because we put ourselves up against other people a lot. And sometimes it's just like, maybe think to yourself, what you did today is a goal that someone thinks they'll never, ever accomplish, which was for you simple, but simple to us is always going to be something that's so complex and far to reach for someone else. So just focus on doing what you can now. And it was hard, and I'm still working on it, but I think that's one of the big lessons 2020 taught me, was what are you going to do now? Focus on that.
So on the other side of the coin, you know, that's like how to motivate yourself to get off the couch, right? Mm-hmm. But for people that are now motivated and training becomes the addiction or the sedation or the motivation, right? How do you find that limit? How do you push that limit without going too far into injury or burnout?
See, and that's a tough one. We're watching a show, what is that show? Kimmy Schmidt yesterday. Spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't seen it. It was like, she didn't want to go back to like the town to do the case of the pastor. So she like did this spirit cycle thing, which is like a ripoff of Soul Cycle. And it brought me back to like, I remember like this weird stage after the military. I was like, I finished school. I didn't know what I was going to do. And I'm just like, oh, this is awkward. And so I was like, I got addicted to Soul Cycle. I was like, oh my God, I wish Kimmy Schmidt. I know exactly what they're talking about. And I think people fall into it because it makes you feel good. Like you said, on the other side of that coin is like, I got myself up. I'm doing this thing. But now this becomes a thing that I have to do, because if I'm not doing it, who am I? What am I doing? And I think for a lot of people, that is going to be what this next year will become. Because as things slowly start to come back to whatever normal is, it's like, I found a bubble that I feel safe in, and now you're telling me to get out of this bubble? It took so long to build this bubble. What's going to be another bubble? And my best advice would be just to remember how you got where you are. Another big thing that I always tell my clients and I tell students in my class is like, where you are is where you should be. And sometimes we get places and we're like, oh, wow, this is really cool. But we forget, think of where you were a month ago and you thought you would never be here. So don't be afraid to, okay, let me pause and try to find a mix of how I can do the thing that's making me happy, but also do other things that are conducive with what I'm trying to accomplish, and give myself space to breathe, recovery is huge, huge, huge. I was running so much in the beginning of quarantine and my knees got jacked up. And so I had to learn, like, you can push it, push it, push it, but your body, you know, this is a human body. We're not DK Metcalf. We can't just do crazy stuff. Like, we've got to rest our bodies. We've got to take care of our bodies. And so find a balance and allow yourself to create multiple bubbles. You don't have to stay in one bubble of just working out. Find a bubble of recovery. And sometimes it's okay to sit on that couch and watch an episode of Tiger King if that's what's going to make you happy in that moment. Just don't get comfortable being comfortable. Allow yourself to keep moving and get uncomfortable and find all of these spaces and find this kind of more of a rotation instead of just a single space that you have to stay in.
It's a perfect transition because you're, as you're talking about bubbles for activity, bubbles for recovery, the balance, how do you approach establishing boundaries in your life and what you do for relationships, for work, for fitness, for, you know, life?
How do I do it? I have a mental breakdown and then I go, I don't know what to do. And then I eat an Uncrustable and I get up and I'm like, all right, let's figure this out. Oh, that's the honest answer. But the polished answer would be communication. Like, I think the best way to do it would be like my relationship. And I used to be really tired. So pre-COVID days, if you take a journey with me, remember back then, like I would teach, I'd get up at six, teach class, clients, work out myself, do night classes, and then I'd get home after 6 p.m. And it's like, I'm exhausted because I've just been pouring this energy into people all day, pouring this energy into people all day, all day, all day. Whereas I'm in a relationship with someone who has more of a traditional 9-to-5 where he gets up, goes to work, gets coffee, goes to his desk, meetings, sits down, emails, that kind of stuff. So then at the end of the day, he's like, I want to like talk and like, I want to like engage and see what's happening. And I'm like drained. I have no energy to do anything. And how to balance those two, because I understand my life. You probably understand my life because you know the fitness world, but he didn't understand that. And so I think with the balance and like trying to figure out how to keep that balance, especially with other people when it comes to interpersonal relationships, communication is key. And hear me out, this might sound crazy, but even communicating with yourself. Like, I have had so many conversations with myself, like, you don't feel good. What's making you not feel good? What can we do to make this better? What do you need to do to like take out of your schedule so that you have mental peace and that you're not going crazy? What do you need to add into your schedule that's going to help you to stay stable and not feel like you're being burnt out? And just having those conversations with the people around you who are like part of your circle, part of your people, and then having those conversations with yourself and being honest with what can you handle versus what can you not handle. And the best advice I can give someone on that is, especially if you're having to tell someone or a job, like, hey, this is hurting me. Those people care about you. More often than not, you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself. They want you to be happy. Communicate with them like, hey, I can't. This is too much for me. I need a break. Because they're going to want you to take that break rather than go crazy. And it was hard for me to learn the like communication part of that, of like speaking up when you feel like you can't do anymore.
After the Uncrustable.
After the Uncrustable. And then I would have another Uncrustable because I'm like, yo, I did it. Way to go. I'm not sponsored by them, by the way. I just think they're delicious.
They are delicious. That's an awesome answer because I really think that is the most crucial unspoken component of balance is just vocalizing what you're going through, right? We internalize so much of that stress and trying to be everything for everybody and be everywhere at once because we think we need to be. And just like being open about how freaking stressed you are with work or how much you need to give to this pursuit or whatever is going on, people will understand and you can fill the gaps around that. But without talking about it, you'll just stack and stack and stack until you crack.
Yeah. And like, especially in the fitness world, like I've seen so many like really good trainers, really good instructors, coaches burn out that way because we think that that's how it has to be. We think that if we take a moment to take care of ourselves, well, someone else isn't going to take a moment and they're going to take my spot. But the thing is, eventually everyone hits a wall. So it's better now to take care of yourself so that you have longevity rather than just sprint, 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 and then fall and you're done. And it's tough because on the other side of that, it's like, well, then am I selfish because I'm not willing to do as much as they are? Don't worry about what they're doing. Worry about what you're doing because their goal might be completely different than your goal and their journey is going to be extremely different than your journey. So focus on you because that's how you're going to get to be it.
Yeah. So what would your advice be to a client who has hit that wall,
they are experiencing that. And now they're trying to think, how do I get to the other side of this? How do I stay hungry for progress? What would you say to a client who's hit the wall, who's trying to fight their mindset of staying here versus pushing past it to move forward?
I would say, I think I'm a very logical person. Like if you talk to my mom and I are best friends, but she keeps it real with me. My mom has always said, Clarence isn't my smartest kid, but he's got the most common sense. And that's why he's successful. So like you said, if you hit a wall, you know what I'm gonna tell you to do? Pivot, go somewhere else. You've obviously hit the wall. And with clients, a lot of time, like one of my oldest clients, he's been my client for 5 years. There'll be moments where he's like, oh, I need to get stronger. Like, I'm just feeling weak. We do weight training. He hits the wall. You know what we're going to do? All right, let's start to work on mobility. We'll do some mobility training. Oh, I feel really good here. You know what? But I want to be a little bit I want to be more cardiovascular, more cardiovascular endurance. Let's do that. And it kind of goes back to that whole thing of don't try to put yourself in one basket or one bubble. But the best advice I can give a client is if you feel like you've hit a wall, okay, pivot, go somewhere else. Do something, not leave your trainer, but let's start to add on to this. How can we expand on this? I've hit my cap. I've done what I can do with this for now, and I'm not feeling motivated by it. So something new has to be injected here to fuel that fire again. Let's pivot. Let's find something else that we can do. Keep the process. Keep the team. Let's find another way to win.
Yeah, there's always another option.
There is. There always is. Yeah. Never pigeonholing yourself into being one kind of trainer, one kind of athlete, one kind of person in general. Don't do that to yourself. And a lot of times we're the only ones that do that to ourselves. We'll have jobs, we'll have certain situations where they're like, this is what I need you to be. But you can be anything you want to be. A lot of times we keep ourselves in these roles and we think that we're defined by these roles. But no, you can define whoever it is you want to be, especially when it comes to fitness. Being a well-rounded athlete, and everyone is an athlete in their own right, is much better than being a singular strong person or just someone that's flexible or someone that can run for 600 miles. Keep it well-rounded. It's better that way.
That pivot away from the wall, what you're saying there, reminds me one of my absolute favorite stories or metaphors that I noticed one time looking at ants on a sidewalk is that if you put a pen or a stick or something in front of a line of ants, they don't stop. What the fuck? They don't do that.
Yeah.
They literally just turn. They go a different direction. Immediately, as soon as something's in front of them, they're just going that way, right? And they'll find a way around. And it's such an inspiring little microcosm of determination.
Yeah. It's kind of to me, that is my journey in a nutshell. It's there's always been walls. And it's funny, I just had this conversation with my little sister because she was I feel I don't know what to do. And I'm Chloe, if you are unhappy with where you are, all you have to do is move. It does left, right, backwards, forward. You don't like where you are right now. So go anywhere else. Do something else. Just don't stop because you don't like this spot. You don't like it. So get out of here. Go do something else. So it's that's perfect. I've never thought about that, but I'm stealing that. That's going to be ours now. We're going to co-sign on that.
you can share that in Sempo in the next class with Chris on it when you're...
Yeah. I'll let him know where I got it.
Awesome. So as you're looking into the next year, what are you training for? What's personally motivating you to double down on what you're doing?
I think for me, fitness-wise,
let's start there. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, fitness-wise, smart. Should have known he was smart when he told me he went to UCLA. But he's smart. And he told me that when you turn 30, your body's going to react differently. Cause I was working out all the time and doing all these things and then just sitting down on the couch or not doing any recovery. And I was nah, it's all mental. I can now tell you at 32, he was correct. He's not the only person who's ever said this. People have said it and it's science to you. But for me, I do think there's a mental aspect to it, which is okay. So I can't just work out and put all this tension and pressure on my body and then stop and go hang out with friends. There's got to be another component to this as well. And I think about athletes. You think about, for instance, Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant was a monster. He would drive it to the hole. He would play defense the entire time. He would just pound on you, because that's what he could do. He had that energy, he had that fire. But as he got older, he had to have a little bit more finesse in his game. He had to find a way of, I can't just drive and get past these young guys anymore. I've got to learn to shoot. You know, I've got to learn to create space and get myself open so I don't have to do as much work. So for me, I think what I've been focusing on is I want to still be fit. I want to still be able to do things. Like, for instance, we were supposed to do like a Spartan race this year. We were going to do a half marathon. I want to be able to do all those things. Those things I've never done in my life before, and I've never been older than I am before. But with that, I've learned that I love yoga. Yoga, especially like, what is it called? Restorative yoga is my favorite because it's just like long-term napping with directions. But it's great. It makes my body feel better. I'm big on like doing a lot of these flow things that I'm learning about. And so adding those new elements to like my arsenal and just kind of like my treasure chest of things that I can do, I want to build more on that in 2021. With tempo, especially, I've taken the challenge of, I want to become like a recovery specialist. Like, I want to start teaching a series of recovery classes. And because I am who I am, I want to do them well, which means I'm going to have to study. I'm going to have to learn. I'm going to have to like deep dive into this thing that I've never done before. But doing it for tempo and doing it for our clients is only going to benefit me, because it's something that I also need to do for myself so that I can keep running these races and keep, you know, doing these marathons and stay strong and stay fit.
Outside of fitness, what else are you training for?
I think when I think of 2021, I am like this anxious, scared, but I'll be honest, I have not been probably since I got out of the military. And the majority of that has to do with tempo, because like I said, I've been working there since the beginning. I met with the CEO at a Phil's Coffee in 2018. And it was like an Instagram message that was like, someone's requesting to message you. And I was like, okay, who is this guy? What is this? They want me to sell these shirts or something. And I met with him. And I remember when I had that meeting, I was like, this could either be something really big or it could be nothing at all. And when we first started, I gave my thing with tempo is I'm going to give the energy to it that it's giving to me. I'm not going to deep dive into it too much. I had other things going on. But then this year, especially with the pandemic, the silver lining of it was that people were at home. And guess what tempo wants you to do? Work out at home. And so like seeing it come to life in the second half of this year, really cool moment happened. Hillary Duff Instagrammed me about me, and she said she loved me. My friends have now started to be like, are we still friends? I don't know. I was like, I'll let you guys know. Luke McGuire and I are pretty close. Like my dad, and it called me like a month ago, goes, hey, you in this commercial? And I was like, what? Dad, what are you talking about, dad? He's like, I saw a commercial. It says tempo. Are you wearing a red shirt? I'm like, dad, that's me. He goes, but let me make sure, like, dad, that's me. And like seeing people like message me and all these things happen and all this stuff is happening, I'm like, this is just the beginning. And I'm like really anxious and excited to see where it's going to go next year. And I think for me, it's just about in my personal life, managing all that, making sure that plan still works with my plan for my life. I'm keeping the people that are important to me close to me. I'm not losing sight of what my end goal is, which is to be a sportscaster, but also lifting up my team and trying to grow and still give tempo this same energy that it's giving me, which when I think of 2021, I'm like, there's going to be a lot of energy coming. And it's just like trying to manage that, because it's like, this could be the big thing that I thought it could be. And it's scary, but it's exciting. So I don't know. We'll see.
I'm excited for you. There's a lot ahead.
Yeah.
What's the biggest thing that businesses can learn from the personal training?
I think, again, being a Mr. Logical, I think make it personal. Part of my story is I was around, I think I was like 27, and living in the Bay Area. The Bay Area is expensive. I was like, you know, I've been doing this grind for 4 years with fitness, and it is a grind. You know, you got to train, you got to find clients, you're teaching classes at all these random gyms and for these random events. And it's like, you have to work for your next check. And I was like, I do have aspirations for myself. You know, I want to be able to be financially secure. So I was like, I can't do fitness. And I took a corporate job and I hated it. I did it for 3 years and I was like, I just hated it. And I think when I look back on that experience, the thing that I hated the most was it just wasn't personal to me. And that's not to say the company I worked for was bad or I love the people that I worked with. But with personal training, you have this connection with your clients. And even in group exercise, you have this connection with the room, whereas it's a lot less about the workout and more so about the way that that person feels with you in that 50 minutes, 45 minutes, 30 minutes that they spend with you. And I know it's hard, especially with this day and age and this climate that we live in, you know, to have those personal relationships at work, because you want to make sure that everything's on par and, you know, you're not crossing any lines. But I think the way that it can happen is people want to work for people who they feel like care about them. And my clients show up even when they're having a bad day, when their kids are being brats, when their spouse is getting on their nerves, because for the time that they're with me, they know, hey, I got you. Like, I've had clients where it's like, they're like, oh, I didn't get any sleep last night. My kid was sick, and, you know, but I didn't want to cancel the session because it was early in the morning. And I let them know, like, let's just take this up. Let's foam roll. Let's, like, let's talk about it. And that will keep someone showing up so much more than me doing five sessions with them. And they're like, look, my biceps are bigger. That person who feels like you care about me and you're going to help me to be my best will come back more than the person that's like, I'm seeing results. Because the truth is, if you're a good trainer, and most trainers hopefully are good trainers, you're going to get results. But how do I make you feel when you're with me? And I think in corporate environments, a lot of times you just feel like I'm a number. And again, I get it. It's hard because that's the climate. It's different. It's a different kind of environment. But even in the military, if I feel like that person's got my back, I'm going to work for them. I want to make sure that they succeed because they have my back. They want me to succeed.
I love that call out of like your clients show up for you as much as you for them, right? Like anytime I've ever worked with a trainer, it's been successful because I felt accountability to them. There were days where it wasn't like I was working out for me. It was like, I went because I didn't want to let them down.
Yeah. Right? Like that is a big thing of fitness. And I remember I told Timbo that when I first started there, I said, I know we're doing this online thing. And my only reservation is if you look at the most successful fitness brands, like any kind of them, they create community. And I was like, how are we going to create community? Because we can have the coolest AI, the coolest design, the nicest waves. We can be wearing the best gear. We can be the prettiest trainers. But if we don't make people feel like they're a part of something, they're not going to come back. They're just going to go somewhere else.
How did you approach that? What's the journey been like on the transition from in-person to digital?
It was tough at first. I think when the trainers, and we have a great team of trainers, when we all got our own tempo stations at home and we were able to see ourselves, we were able to go, oh, wow, I'm awkward. Like, let me be less awkward. Because like you're able to like see like, oh, this is what they're going to experience. Yikes. Let me do it better. But it's a lot of imagination. I'll tell you that tempo has had probably over 100 trainers audition, and we've had the six that we've had. Not because they sucked, but like those people, even like a lot of my friends have come in and they're like, it's so weird. It's just a camera. And like, I don't know what to say. Like nobody's there. And like, these are instructors that I'm like, I've seen you teach an amazing class. I love you. I recommended you, but it's hard. And I think a lot of it is just, you got to try to just, it's pretend. It's a lot of acting. I always tell people my job at Tempo is to be a fitness instructor and an actor mixed in one. I'm like pretending that I see you. I'm trying to anticipate how you're going to feel. And a lot of that goes into, I'm just going to do the workout. I'm going to do it with you and it's going to be real. And so like, when I'm like, ooh, I'm winded, it's because I'm like, if I'm out of breath, hopefully you're out of breath. Otherwise you should be doing my, we should switch. But the pandemic helped a lot too, because we had no choice, because now a lot of places, like my previous job, we were online for like 4 months. We were doing like the Zoom classes. And it was funny. They were like, yeah, everyone's saying, Clarence, you're doing really well. I'm like, well, I've been doing this for a year. So like, I've been training for this moment. I've been waiting for this. Like, I can't see you. I've got to virtually be there. But it's a lot of acting. And we do have like our social media groups for Tempo. And so reading in there, there's a lot of uplifting that is happening, where people will be having like real vulnerable moments where they're like, oh, I took that class. And like halfway through, I wanted to quit. But I just kept going and I just did that. And so I think of those moments when I'm teaching the classes. I'm like, there's going to be someone at this moment when we get 50% through, that's going to be like, I can't finish. Talk to that person. Even if I can't see them, I know they're out there. There's hundreds and thousands of people taking these classes. There's going to be at least one. And if I can reach just one of you, you'll talk about it and it's going to bring somebody else. And it's that creating community moment of knowing that, hey, I'm not alone. So just got to anticipate and kind of hope that there's that person out there.
What's your best advice for showing up with energy in front of the camera? Because now we've got like literally everybody out there working from home, logging in on Zoom. And when you show up in front of that camera to teach a class, you can't be having a bad day, right? It is acting. Yeah. You have to pour that energy in. You have to have that charisma to motivate people and go 150% so that by the time it gets through the camera to them, it's like 91%, right? Like whatever that translation is. How would you coach, you know, anybody to show up with more energy in this virtual environment?
So part of my journey has been, I think when I came out, I was like, for the first time, I was able to like be myself. And I think I thought, like I talked about earlier, how we pigeonhole ourselves into like these labels that we're supposed to be. I'm like, well, I'm this, you know, veteran military guy who's like, you know, 6'1", 210. I'm a bigger guy. And people are like, oh, he's going to be tough. And I thought that's who I had to be. And I remember this moment when someone was like, you should just be yourself. I feel like people would really like you. And I had this mentor and she would tell me the same thing all the time. She was, you don't need everybody to like you. Like, you're not trying to get the entire population in your class. Find those people that do like you, because your job is going to be so much easier when all you have to do is show up and be yourself. And I will never forget the first class that I did that at my old job where I was working. And I was like, okay, well, we'll see if they'll come back next week. And they did, and more came, and more came. And so for me, a piece of advice that I give all instructors, and I told some of the younger instructors on our team this, is be yourself. Like, and it takes a lot, because it's a lot to be vulnerable in that moment. But be yourself, because we don't all have to be the same flavor. And this goes for every trainer, even anyone that's in the entertainment, in life. Like, the world would be so boring if we were all the same. So be you, because that's going to be your biggest trait that no one else can take away from you, is that you are the only you that there is. That authenticity, people can see that. In a world of social media and the internet, we know what's fake, we know what's real. People gravitate towards real. People gravitate towards, I can relate to that. And during this pandemic, it's hard to put away the scariness and put away the like unsureness of what's going to happen next. So I just bring it in the class. I'll start off class like, hey guys, I'm here to crush it with you. Listen, I've had a crappy day. It's been a shitty day. I just wish I could get out of the house. And I think a lot of times people are like, well, if I say that, then people are going to be like, oh man, well, he's in a bad, or he's like sad and I'm sad, blah, blah, blah. But I always like let him know, I'm here to make you feel better, but I'm going to give you my energy. All I want you to do is just give it back. And in those moments, in those days, like I think about before the, even before the pandemic, when I had like a bad day or like got in an argument with Brian before I left the house, I'm like, all these things are happening. And I go into class, I'm like, I'm just going to put it all here. Those were always the best classes I ever had, because like working out, like therapy, like whatever it is that's your vice that makes you feel good, if you just let things go and just be in that moment, it's crazy how quick things turn around. And I would just tell people, instructors specifically, be you, be authentically you, because the day that you're having the worst day ever, something bad happened, someone in that class is having a horrible, shitty day. And to know that they're not the only one having that shitty day is going to make them work that much harder, because they know exactly what you're going through. And more often than not, everyone else can relate to everything that you're going through, and they're going to want to work for you. And you're going to see that energy. It's going to give you energy, and it's going to be a moment.
So this journey to being comfortable with showing the authentic you, let's go all the way back to Air Force. How old were you? Mm-hmm.
So I joined the Air Force when I was 21 years old.
And you were in for how long?
5 years.
Okay. At that point in your life, did you feel authentically you?
No. I think it's always weird too. And a lot of times, like especially the question I get the most is, so, and everyone's always kind of like, I don't know how to approach this. Like, so were you like gay in the military? Like, well, I was, that was always me. But I think I knew who I was. I think I'm a human to my core, and I was afraid if other people would like who that person was, because I felt who I was pretending to be. And people liked that person. That kid was cool. He was fun. It's weird that he's like not trying to sleep with girls, but he's cool. It's fine. But I was like, will people like me if they know that part of me? And you know, we talk about, there's a lot of talk about how bad the world is and everything doom and gloom, but that wasn't that long ago. And so I think about what it would have been like for a gay kid at 21 versus when I was 25, and the acceptance and the way the world viewed that was so different. And so I think for me, I just wasn't ready. It was never a thing. It was never people being mean to me. It was never any of that. I think to be authentically myself, I had to accept who I was authentically, and I didn't. I didn't accept myself. Like, even after the fact, like, now my friends are like, I mean, we had feelings and we just didn't know what to say, but we just wanted you to know, like, we love you no matter what. Parents, same thing. And, you know, I know that's my experience. For other people, it's different. But I think it's hard to be yourself when you don't know who you are or you don't accept it.
Coming out of the military, what was your intention for the next step?
I think for me, there wasn't really a plan. I would like to say I loved my military experience. Like, I think you hear a lot about the military on the news and like through movies and TV. And anyone that's ever in the military is always like, what the hell are they talking about? The military, I still to this day, and I work for some amazing companies, is the most open environment I've ever worked in. Because at the end of the day, you have my back. Cool, I've got your back. I don't care what color you are. I don't care what sex you are. I don't care who you want to marry, sleep with. I don't care what TV shows you watch at night. If someone's coming for me, you got my six, cool, I've got yours. And that's how it was. It was like everybody was just, we hated each other at times and like we fought each other. But at the end of the day, it was like, this is a fraternity, this is a brotherhood. And it was great. Which then people would go, well, then why did you get out? I think the military is, it is business to its core. They've done things the way that they've always done things. And I think that works for some people. I am not a person, like I said, I have a lot of common sense. I would see things like, why are we, like, it's 2012, why are we doing things this way? Like, there's a way better way to do it. That's just how we've always done it. And so I realized that wasn't going to work for me. And I think I got out just because I said to myself, there's got to be more. And I've had, like, probably a handful of there's got to be more moments in my life. And I had one of those in the military. I was like, I'm good at my job. This is fun. You know, I'm living overseas. I've got to travel to a bunch of countries. But there's got to be more. And when I got out, I think the plan was just to do more. And I didn't know what more was. I didn't get out with the intention of being a trainer. I was going to school and I was like, I'm going to do music because that's what I did my whole life. I was like, oh, I'm going to have a revival in my music career. And then I was like, no, that's like not what I wanted to do. And I just kind of had to stumble and like fall in love. Okay, I can't go that way. Like the pivot thing. I was an ant. I was going and I was like, nope, don't want to do that. Okay, no, don't want to do that. Don't want to do that. But I just didn't stop. And then when I got into fitness, like I said, like doors opened for me because I just kept showing up. I was like, I'm going to keep showing up and keep trying. But there was no plan. It was not to get out of the military, be a fitness trainer. It was get out of the military. All right, don't go broke and just keep trying to be successful.
What kind of music were you doing?
So I've sang my whole life. I was like 5 years old at church one day and my parents, like I got up there to sing a solo and like everyone's like, oh my God. And my parents were just like, we don't know, that's not us. But my mom was best mom in the world. She taught me from a young age. She was like, if you're going to sing, you need to learn all styles of music. Don't just learn how to sing like R&B and pop, like learn how to sing all styles. And so like I did like show tunes, I've done theater. I was trying to get into like the music industry. I wanted to be the next Chris Brown, which looking at it now, I'm glad I didn't because that's not a good path. But I would do like when I was in Japan, I was in the military and I did this like contest and I didn't win the contest. I got second, but they were like, you can sing. So we're going to have you go sing on all these military bases and do all these things. And I like, it was like poppy, like it's exactly what you think it would be. Whatever you're thinking right now, that's exactly what it was. I'm proud of it, but it's not something that I'd be like, hey, Google, play my song. You know, like it's not like that kind of thing. It was just, I'm good at singing and it's nice to do it. All right, now Google's doing stuff. Hey, Google, stop playing music.
Hey, Google, play Clarence's song.
Don't do it. Don't do it. But it's like one of those things that's cool when you go to a karaoke bar and people are like, oh shit, that guy can sing.
That's awesome. Music was similarly my first creative passion. And when the world shut down this year and it ended travel and adventure for me in a big way, my focus was poured back into that. So I've been writing and recording and going back into music.
You know, what's funny is the music thing. So music, I would say music is like my love. Like it's like my heart because it's the thing that just like, I get it. I'm a weirdo. I love to, like, my life is very good. I'm very fortunate and blessed right now. But I love to listen to sad songs and just feel those sad emotions, because I like the process of the writing the song, and I like think about the artist and like what they went through. But when I was teaching a lot, like right before the pandemic last year, I had really bad problems with my vocal cords, where like my vocal cords were like severely damaged and I had to get surgery on them. And I remember like I was like going to quit teaching because I couldn't sing anymore. And it was like a Little Mermaid moment where I was like, my voice is gone. And for me, like, that was weird, because I'm like, this is the thing that I've always done my entire life without having to try. Like, I could just go, I would be like, I couldn't do it. And it was traumatizing to me, which is another silver lining of this pandemic, was after like 2 months, my voice was like, my vocal cords were able to heal and my voice came back. And like, even if I now with tempo, I don't have to do that kind of like yelling, but I was like, I don't know if I would have lasted in the environment that I was in, because I was like, I'm not going to become a singer, but I don't want to let a part of me die to do this job.
I don't know what I would do if I just woke up and
like, yeah, like imagine like if you like you couldn't sing. Like, I was like, this is not fun.
Cause like exactly
borderline like depressed.
You might not even be trying to pursue that anymore, but you just struck such a chord in me, because I'm thinking back, like, I've just sang since I was like in third grade, right? And it's been like a thing that I've done through everything. And like when you have those off days where you can't hit the certain note, it's like, what's going on?
Yeah. You're like in your car, like, why can't I do that? And that's how it was for me. Like, for instance, like driving in the car, since I worked in the city, but I lived in the East Bay. So I'd have to do like 20, 30 minute commute every day, listening to music and not being able to just like even the octave lower to sing along with Beyonce, like just not being able to do anything. I was like, it hurt my soul. Like, I was like, I can't do this, but I love this. But I was just like, I don't know what to do. And then COVID-19, and I was like, oh, it's back. So now I sing every day just because I can.
Good for you. What was the pivot to personal training? How did you find that?
So I think I was going to school and I was bartending at this restaurant, but every morning I would wake up, because the military provides the thing that everyone gets, no matter who you are, and you hate it and stop doing it after you're gone, or you continue it. I continued it, is it provides structure. It provides this like need for routine. And so I would wake up every day, because I didn't have to be at the restaurant until like 10. And so I get up at 6:30 a.m. so I could get out of the house by 7, so get to the gym by like 7:15, 7:20, do my workout, do a little bit of cardio. And like my roommate would be like, you're a weirdo. Like, why are you like doing this workout stuff? Like, you're so passionate about it. Or like I told you, when I got addicted to SoulCycle, was going all the time. And then I just realized, I was like, yo, this makes me really happy. Maybe I should be a trainer. Cause I would have random people come up to me in the gym and they'd be like, are you a trainer? And like, nah, I'm just a guy that works out all the time. Cause he's sad. So I was like, why don't I just become a trainer? So I used that time and I got certified. And then one of the girls that I bartended with her, she was like, my husband needs a trainer. He needs a trainer real bad. He got out of shape. But he was like my very first client. And then it just took off from there. And I realized, okay, this is a career path where you actually can make decent money, you know, better money than like working retail or something that I was doing at that time. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to put my all into this. And again, I always just happened to be somewhere where someone was like, hey, I like you. You look pretty enough and you seem nice. Come do this class. Or, oh, hey, someone told me that they liked you. Kind of like this. Someone saw me and they were like, hey, I like you. Come do this. And then those opportunities just opened more doors and things just took off.
What do you think contributes to that serendipity? Like, is it the attitude of just saying yes? Is it the fact that you just had that attitude, right? That you're like, hey, I like doing this. Maybe I should do that. Like, perpetual curiosity of positivity and trying to chase the thing like that. What do you
think? I think that's exactly what it is, because I've talked to people all the time who are like, oh, I'm unhappy with this and I would really love to do this. And I'm always just like, well, why don't you do it? And they're like, because I'm not like, you can't just go do things you want to do. I'm always perplexed, like, why not? But yeah, I think I'm an eternal optimist. Like, I can like negative tweets on Twitter all day, or, you know, roast someone with the best of them. But at the end of the day, if you're like, hey, can you help me? I'm like, yes. So like, I believe that things are going to work out. I believe that there's good in the world and people are at their core good. And so I think that belief just always pushes me to just go for it, because it's going to work out. And if it doesn't work out, guess what? You can do 700 other things. And it took me 30 years to learn that's not everyone's mindset. And I was like, that's just how everybody is, right? Everyone just believes in themselves. But belief in yourself is a rare, rare quality. And I guess my parents instilled it in me, but I'm glad I have it, because that's the only thing that I know is the reason why these things just keep happening. Because I just keep being like, oh, no, I'm going to make it. And I'm a big, like, when you said, what's the advice I give to them? I'm like, fake it till you make it. Just don't hurt anybody. But if you got to walk in there thinking that you're going to do it, because if you don't, especially in this industry with the way it is now, sharks, they're going to see, oh, that person is not confident and it's not going to work out. So just, even if you don't know, do your best. Take it till you make it.
With anything, right? It's like, if you don't think you can, who else will?
Yeah. And it's like this weird line that, like, I've had to learn of struggling with confidence and cocky. And I said this the other day too, when we were in a meeting, I was like, you know, the difference that and I learned this, there's between confident and cocky people. Cause I used to be a cocky asshole, excuse my language, but I was a cocky asshole when I had to be brought down a few pegs. But cocky people need other people to believe in them. Confident people believe in themselves. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm no longer going to look for gratification from others. I'm just going to believe in myself. I'm like, really believe in myself and believe in myself and talk myself up. And when I started believing in myself, I was like, oh, they're believing in me now too, which is weird, which wasn't what I wasn't going for, but now they do. So it's tough. But I think when you learn that line of like, just believe in yourself, because if you don't, why should anybody else?
I'm going to have to clip this and send it to my mom. Growing up, my whole life as a kid, my mom would tell us, my brother and I, confidence is sexy. Being cocky is a turnoff. She said those two things the whole time.
Yeah. I get that. That's funny in my class all the time. And I say this to Brian, my friend. And I kind of, this is like your mom's line, but it's just something different. Cause I always tell like in class and anyone that the group instructor knows, you'll be like, all right, everyone grab the weight in your left hand. And a bunch of people just grab it with the right. And I would go, team, listening is sexy. Listening is sexy. Just listen. That's all you got to do is listen. So confidence and listening, two sexy skills.
That's awesome. All right, Clarence, what's the thing that you're most stoked for right now?
You know, it's real simple. I think I'm just stoked. And this is going to sound weird because we just got done talking about all the confident and cocky stuff. I think I'm just stoked for myself. For about my life. I think wrapping it all around into a nice gift with a bow. I was a person who put these crazy, unrealistic expectations on himself. I believed that perfect was an attainable goal that I could get and everyone would love me. And it was a real blow just to me to learn that I was making myself miserable by trying to be all of these things that were impossible. Because one of the things I learned is what's perfect to me might not be perfect to you. I can be like, this is a perfect sandwich. And you'll be like, that sandwich is trash. Like, these goals are not real. These are things that I'm trying to hold myself to because I don't feel like I'm good enough. And so when I think about my life over like the last 3 years and to where I'm at, we moved during the pandemic. Goal to my house this year, but it's really unstable. So we didn't buy a house, but we moved to a bigger apartment. And little moments like that in my life, which is most people are like, oh, you switched apartments. Like, what's the big deal? But I remember being that 19-year-old kid that moved to the Bay Area. And I legit lived in a closet. Like, there was clothes above me when I went to sleep at night. It was a closet. It was small. I could barely afford my $400 rent. And I was eating ramen noodles, like splurging was getting a McDouble at McDonald's. And that optimism that we talked about, that just keep going. That little ant that I was this year, because of everything that happened with COVID-19, allowed me an opportunity to sit and actually just be and to think about those kinds of things. So small things like moving to an apartment that's bigger with space. And I'm like, I can afford this. This is weird. And so I don't think about like, what Tempo could create for me. And yeah, I'm excited about it. And I'm excited about, you know, all the other things that are happening in my career and stuff that's going on. But I'm just really like happy that my life is good, because what I thought my life should have been is not what my life is, but what the life that I'm actually living is so much better than I could have ever imagined. And it's just because it just is. It's just a little, I'm happy, which is a weird thing, because I never ever thought that what is happening right now would be my life or that it would make me this happy.
I can tell you exude happiness through the screen. It's wonderful.
Thanks.
I mean, it just goes back to the focus on the micro moments, the micro goals, like the focus on Tuesday, the perspective shift for gratitude and appreciation for what you've accomplished today, not next year, right? Like the
It really has. And it's just, I think allowing myself to be wrong first and foremost, and then allowing myself to find out new information and do something different with that has really helped me to progress as a person. And that kind of has spilled over into all the different avenues with my career, with my interpersonal relationships with other people, with just life in general. I'm just focusing on right now, not trying to be this perfect being, but just trying to be my best. And it's become a mantra that I've just tried to, especially in fitness and in my classes, give to other people. And I'm like, I promise you, I was doing good things. Most people would have been really happy with where my life was. But when I stopped trying to be all those things for everybody else and just decided to be who I was and be happy with what I'm doing today, all that stuff just got magnified by 10. So maybe it'll work for you. Maybe it won't work for you. Maybe you need to keep doing whatever it is that you're doing and strive to be the perfect human being, but you might have a little bit more fun just being the best that you can be today. And then tomorrow worrying about being your best that day. So
I feel like I want to talk to you for the next like 6 hours. Like, super fun.
Thanks, man. I try, and there's a lot of people to thank for that, because it's been a struggle. If you had talked to me 6 years ago, you would have been like, I don't know about that guy. He seems like kind of a douchey. But you know, we all grow up. So
totally. You know, it's funny what you were talking about like, I've always considered myself to have eternal optimism and just perpetual positivity. But even just watching, you know, the show Songland, have you ever heard of it?
Yeah.
I was watching it just the other night with my wife, and there was somebody like writing a country song. And I made a comment to her. I was like, I just realized why I don't love most country songs. I was like, they're just too happy. It's like, I for whatever reason, I am drawn to ballads and drama and heartache in music, even though my life is happiness.
Like, you know, and I do, like, I love, like, I remember when Brian and I first started dating, so I was like, my favorite thing, because I was like, when I moved to San Francisco, like, made me who I am. Like, San Francisco was really that punch in the gut of, like, who are you? Figure it out. Because I didn't know anybody here. My family all lived in Arizona. And I just was like, I don't want to go back to Arizona. And I was like, I got a few, you know, dollars left in the bank. So I just moved here, and it was like really like starting at ground zero. But I was like, one of my favorite things to do is just walk around the city, because I love the city, and just listen to sad songs. Like, I'm just smiling. And he's like, that is so weird. But I'm just like you. I do like country, though, I will say. There are sad country songs. But most songs, they're like, I got beer,
right?
Bald Eagles and Budweiser. But... There's good ones.
That's it. That's the show. Hope you enjoyed it. Go connect with Clarence at Lil Busy. Hit me up at Jonathan Ronzio. If you have a question, takeaway, something you want to share, something you want to chat about that you were inspired through this episode, shoot me a text too. Whether it's a DM on Instagram at Jonathan Ronzio, or text me 617-207-6369. And definitely be sure to jump into the conversations with our community. The Stoke Fest happening over inside the Stokecast Facebook group. Be there. Until next time, thanks again. Talk to you later.